Welcome to another episode of the Pop Culture Roundtable, the podcast that's huddled up together in the studio as we speak. In this episode, we talk about Ford v. Ferrari, The Mandalorian, Aaron Hunting, and Mondo's It's an Art Show, Charlie Brown. I'm Andrew Sale.
I'm Lauren Rubin.
I'm Patrick Hill.
So reach out and touch someone, because it's time to start another episode.
Stop it.
To kick every episode off by going around the table, which is where we talk about something new, fun, and noteworthy about our weeks. But this week, we are all together, and there's no table.
There's literally a table right in
front
of us.
Well, where the computer's sitting, but we're sitting in my studio with nothing.
What you meant to say is there is more than just a table right now.
Well, there's
there's a lot of cool things in this room.
So this is your first time in the studio.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Officially, you've seen it via the computer, but
yes.
Welcome officially to the studio.
Thank you.
What is fun about this space is that, I don't know, 85, 90% of the stuff that you see around on the shelves and on the wall are from people who have been on the show.
Yeah.
Which is super fun.
Well, so the split is that it's either A, from people that have been on the show, or B, it's from people in our community that have recommended something.
Yes, or gifts.
B, future people that might be on the show.
Yes, that's some of them are like, they're on my hope chest.
Yeah, that's Calvin, some really good choices.
Calvin Klein on the.
Do you think Mr. Hope has a hope chest?
No, it's fine. I think any chest he has would be a hope chest.
Yeah, like his actual chest is a hope chest.
Yeah. Yeah, anything he lays on there. we're diverting. So because we're all together,
see you rolling your eyes at me in real time now. It's
yeah,
great.
Now you don't have to worry. Wait, is that just lag? Is he rolling his eyes at something? No, he's definitely
rolling.
No,
it's for sure.
It's for sure.
It was
I
that
feel
joke.
It now.
The air in the room changes now. It's just a different. It's a different vibe. But we're all together because we did something really, really cool tonight. We got the opportunity to go to. Mondo Gallery, and they did their It's an Art Show, Charlie Brown, and it was a ton of fun.
I was not excited for this show. I mean, I recognize the cultural significance of Peanuts, and certainly growing up as a kid, like, I've seen all the different, like, holiday specials and things like that. It's kind of boring. And so walking into this show, like, I don't know that I had, I was thinking, okay, we'll go in for, 15 minutes or so, take some pictures, and we'll come back and talk about it. This show was an absolute blast. I could have spent an incredible amount of money there. Thankfully, my wife was there to help me show restraint. But B, just the way they had it set up, the way all the panels captured these different emotions, and then having Super 7 and what they brought out, the whole spirit and atmosphere of it was one of my favorite gallery shows I've been to.
Yeah, and this was the first time that you have been at one, Lauren, that you've actually been to a gallery opening with Mondo. What was your expectation, and then how did that follow through to reality?
Yeah, I guess, like, for some reason I did think the gallery was a little bit bigger, which is fine, but it just, like, when they have people in, it's just full of people, which was really exciting. Like, the minute the doors open, people were filling up and checking out all the artwork. So it was a big hit, it seemed like. And it was really cool. Like, they took individual panels from different Charlie Brown strips and blew them up. And it kind of just gave you different context for the jokes, because it's pulled out of the bigger story and you just see these comments. And I think it really gave the, like, much sadder tone to Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
And we normally think of.
We got the opportunity. So I knew that the show was going to be, it's all Charles Scholl's original artwork, but that has then been separated into screen prints and, blown up, like you said. But we got the opportunity to talk to Eric Garza, who's one of the creative directors there. We spent some time talking to him, and he said the real at the heart of the show was to try to really enhance that bummer feeling and really feel that Charlie Brownness. And the best way to do that was to take these panels that are one of typically probably 15 or 20 story arc panels, and take one of them and pull it out of context to really show you how, like this, like you said, the sadness, and really like pull away that kind of main bummer moment. And it was, I didn't know how many pieces they were going to have. They had a ton.
A lot. Yeah.
There was
it
a
filled
lot.
That place up.
And he said that they were through the process of they got the opportunity to curate that. So they got to go through and not only pick what stories they wanted to tell, but pick the exact panel. And then they, you know, connected back with the Peanuts IP and talked to them. And then they, once that was all approved, then they got original scans from Peanuts and gave those scans to John Smith. And John Smith did every single one.
He did all the separations?
He did all the separations. And this is the same guy who did all the separations for the Batman show a few months back.
Good for that guy.
I'm like, how great would it be to get to work with these, the original artwork of these, like, quintessential Americana, like this, like Snoopy and the gang, you know, the whole Peanuts gang is like, it's kind of like, it's right up there with like Norman Rockwell or some, you know what I mean? Like it is American art.
Were you excited for this show?
I was, it was one of those things where I was going into it, wishing that there was some Charles Schulz stuff, but then also wishing that there was some tribute style stuff.
That's right.
From other artists.
First anticipated.
Yeah, that's what I was expecting. So when I realized that it wasn't going to be that, I was a little bummed out, but it felt like the football was taken out from under my kick, as it were. But when we got there, the execution of it was actually very exciting. Like I really, I was pleasantly surprised. I didn't expect to walk out of there owning anything. Mm-hmm. I walked out of there owning a few things.
Yeah, same.
And you guys went to town.
We all got the opportunity to, because our lives are so sad, everything that was on the wall, absolutely.
This speaks to me. Let me say, Daniel at Super 7 was great.
Yeah,
super
he was
nice,
really nice
guy. And they showed up in a big way. I mean, their booth was awesome.
Yeah, so
and Patrick are living in regret of not buying the big gosh. Snoopy yes. toy.
Yeah, we walked away with our head down with the bum, 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 bum. So Super 7, this past summer at Comic-Con, they rolled out their Peanuts collaboration, which is all these figures that are absolutely gorgeous and beautiful. Well, they, in preparation of the show, collaborated with Mondo. So they had their whole Super 7 booth there with pins. So I got a couple pins. And Lauren, in a second, you can talk about the fun pin that you and I both got. Stickers and
blind boxes, vinyl toys.
Yeah, I got the Snoopy vinyl toy, which is the 1955 Snoopy wearing like the coonskin cap. It's beautiful. It's super fun.
I really regret not getting that.
It's really, really cool. The packaging is cool.
They also had shirts and puzzles and
tote bags.
But they had
a lot of stuff.
But the king was the Safubi, which is like a Japanese soft vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
The Safubi
life size.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, life size. I guess that makes sense.
Yes.
Of Snoopy wearing the Charlie Brown shirt and a Charlie Brown mask.
Yes.
But if you took the mask off, it was the 50s version of Snoopy. And
The entire Super 7 line is the 50s version of all the Peanuts.
Which
characters.
It ended up being a really cute.
Oh.
Yeah.
But also substantial piece. I mean, it was
as big as a real dog.
Yeah, you sit it anywhere and it's going to be a talking point. Oh gosh, I love it.
And the shirt is real. Like it's a real shirt you could put on and take
off.
It
has articulation, the legs move, the tail moves. Again, the mask comes off.
It was the cutest thing I've seen since The Mandalorian.
Way better than the only piece of Safubi that you have.
that Ninja Turtle. You get to see that in real life now. Oh, his face is covered up right now with my...
Took me a minute to figure out which one
it's weird. His eyes follow you around the room, so you had to cover his face.
It stares into your soul.
And it's behind you. It could sneak up on you at any moment.
Well, I always have a camera on me, so I can see what's coming from behind me.
Just for this guy?
Specifically for that purpose. We also got pins. Tell everybody about the pin that you and I got, Lauren, because it's super fun.
Yeah, they had some really cool ones. My favorite one was definitely... It's... Again, the 50s style Snoopy, but he has a little mask of Charlie Brown, kind of like this toy that you guys were just describing.
Yeah,
it's just kind
of
a pin version.
Yep.
So he's wearing the Charlie Brown t-shirt, and the mask is on a hinge, so it flips up, and you can like see Snoopy without the mask on.
And I think it's magnetic, right?
Yeah, it feels like a little kind of, you can feel the magnet like undoing when you lift it.
It's substantial. Yeah. It's and it doesn't feel cheap at all. It feels really, really nice. Like,
yeah,
everything...
and the hinge is like just right so that it actually like stayed up when I moved it to like show how it worked.
Yeah,
like, I'm very excited about it. They had some really cute ones.
Everything that they did, that Super 7 did and that Mondo did for this show, was done with excellence. And that was, I think. Not that we expect any less from Mondo or anything, but like I said,
this is a very different kind of gallery show for them. And like, they literally took individual panels, which are normally like 2-3 inches, and blew them up to like poster size. So
you
it's totally different experience of seeing Peanuts, even if you grew up with it your entire life. Because I've never seen these like this, where you can see every dot and how that
works.
The
exaggeration of the half toning and the lack of like. These are originally done in newspapers, so they're run really quickly. Registration is all over the place, so you see all of those imperfections, but in a way that, in a world right now where people are trying to duplicate that, like they're trying to mimic that in their work, and you have all these plugins and things through True Grit and all these different, you know, these Retro Supply Co. and all these different companies that make things that set that jitter into your work. This is all real. This is all real and tangible. And so you have this very hand done look to it, because it was hand done, and it just is a cool way of experiencing Peanuts.
Yeah. And there's something to be said for going to a gallery where only one artist is represented.
Yeah.
Because we've been to shows before where there's been a mix of artists, and while Mondo always strikes a very high quality.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean that all the art feels like it's on the same level.
Sure.
And
well, they all have different sensibilities, right?
Well, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, and I recognize that there's different opinions and likes and dislikes and preferences and whatever. But that said, it means you can go into a show you really anticipate and it be hit or miss. Whereas going into this, it may have elevated that it was not only what you expected, but seeing the different format and seeing these kind of out of context pieces, it ultimately added interest that just it could only exceed your expectations.
Right.
Like it can't miss at that point. So a very, very good show. Yeah.
So again, in anticipation of what's to come, we got the opportunity to talk to Eric Garza, and he told us there were some rumblings that there was going to be another Pixar show, and it was confirmed at MondoCon, but this was the first public announcement of that show and when it will be. And so 3 weeks from tonight when we're recording this, so in just 2.5 weeks from when you're hearing this on release day, there will be the Pixar show, and it'll be highly anticipated, and I imagine lots of... really cool stuff. We got the opportunity to hear a little bit about what's coming down the pipe with that one. Some of which we can talk about, some of which we can't, but he's very excited about some of the pieces that will be represented.
They just really slid that announcement in.
Like looking at this postcard now, and I think it maybe has some hints because
what
the stamps are on it. Cause it kind of looks like, passport stamps is what the postcard is.
Yeah, and there's this question too. If it's on the postcard, I imagine.
Yeah, what is it? What do y'all think?
Well, based
we don't
on
know
this,
anything, so we can speculate. This is easy.
Just based on this card, the artwork is for Radiator Springs. There's one with the little alien from Toy Story, like his face. One from Santa something cut off Mexico. So I'm gonna guess that's Coco.
Yeah.
Spirit of Adventure. So that's Up. One from France, so Ratatouille, and Scottish Highlands. Those are all really good ones.
Good,
those are good ones. And
those are all ones I could see them choosing.
Uh-huh, yeah. And so this is when we asked him, he said that this was a fun show for them because they all got to kind of pick their favorite.
Yeah.
Not every Pixar film will be represented, but they got to pick their favorite. And so I'm really excited. He kept the artist list very close to the chest. Mm-hmm. He didn't talk much about it, but he did say he's very excited about it, and there will be some very well-known people bringing their work to the show. And so,
well, we've seen a Ratatouille vinyl from them before.
Yes.
So for them to spend more time in Ratatouille, obviously someone is pursuing that on the Mondo
Aaron
side.
Aaron Horky also did a really good Ratatouille one for them a long time ago.
I personally would love to see a print for Brave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would be a very big fan of that. And then, of course, Coco. Coco just lends it. It's already a beautiful film. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly vibrant, and it lends itself so well to the kind of Mondo artist treatment.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that show. I think it'll be a good one. So
I'm actually excited to see more Ratatouille stuff because it's like my favorite one, and I see less of that than most Pixar movies.
I just think it's nice to reframe mice as being positive.
Yeah. They've gotten a bad rat for so long. you're welcome. You can package that one.
Now Lauren's rolling her eyes.
So that was the show. I'm guessing the pieces that are remaining will go live very soon. The show will run really by the time this airs a couple more days. So if you're in the Austin area, you can go see it. But the show will come online to purchase some of these pieces. There's quite a few. There's like we said, there's quite a few pieces. So and they're very reasonably priced because of what they are. They're like for the Charlie Brown show. They're like $45 ranging up to like
$150.
Is that how much the piece you had was? Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's why I was like,
ew, boy.
Can't do it.
The pieces that Patrick and I picked up. We're only $45.
If it had been $45, I think I would have done it. But I was like, I can't do that now.
But we'll post pictures of the pieces that we thought adequately communicated our personalities best. We took photos with them. We'll post those. They'll be in the show notes and on our Instagram. So that was our around the table. We got to do it together this week, which was very, very fun. And it was a lot of fun. Thanks to the Mondo crew for bringing us out and allowing us to just have a good time out there with them.
Lauren, are you going to make it to the Pixar show?
I sure hope so. Yeah, I'd love to.
We can have some fun with that show as well. So, all right, that'll be it for our Around the Table. Let's just go ahead and jump into some categories. All right, so I'm going to kick off the categories this week because I'm very, very excited to show you guys some things. Typically, this would happen in our Around the Table, but since we did our Around the Table together, this is a little bit flipped from what we would typically do. But a couple of things that I was able to get this week. One of them, well, before I get to this one, I do want to revisit the conversation that we were having last week, if you listened to the show, when we were talking about the Happy Meal toys, and Lauren said that she had like a whole bunch of the original Chicken McNugget Happy Meal toys. She brought them with her on this trip, and so I'm going to... I'm going to lean down and pick up this Hefty bag, literally Hefty brand bag.
This is like original from the 90s.
The
bag and everything.
Tell me if this translates. Does the weight translate to on air? I don't know. We'll have to see.
There's a lot of them.
There's so many. I didn't even realize they made this many.
Yeah, like thanks to my mom, who hopefully might be listening, but she saved all of those, and we have like all the pieces that go with it. We just don't have every single one that was ever made.
I absolutely adore these, and they have like you hold them in your hand, and they instantly bring back that texture and that feel. They also make me super hungry.
You can tell like which ones are newer and older too, because they're like just the texture of the plastic and stuff.
But if you're listening to the show and you're unaware, that means you're younger than us. But these toys, I think it would probably have them marked on here somewhere, right? 1988. This one is stamped 1988.
Wow, that's 31 awesome. Years.
1988 for that one.
1 year less than me.
This one is 1995. So they did these for quite a while. I had no idea they did them for that long. But this one's dressed up like a ghost, and it's got the little thing that slips over its head. You've got in here like the pumpkin, the jack-o'-lantern one, which is phenomenal. This one's 1992. Anyway, we'll post a picture of these. I'm gonna stage them and do a photo shoot with these guys, and we'll post this on our Instagram page.
A lot of good ones in there.
There are so many. Oh, I remember the Frankenstein.
Yeah,
like where you have the head that slides over top of the Frankenstein over the top of the.
I was like, the most obscure one I think that's in there that I love is the like Australian guy that's totally like Crocodile Dundee because that was popular then.
I didn't know they did the Ronald McDonald. There's a Ronald McDonald one that you can dress him up as. Okay, yeah. So anyway, I'm not gonna keep belaboring that right now because this is an audio format, so I'm not gonna just rifle through a bag. But you are not joking. Like, these are incredible, and it instantly brings back my childhood. And yeah. It's so incredible.
All right, they're in a box with all my Star Wars toys.
Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect.
Yeah.
All right. So for mine, I purchased something a while back. We've had on the show before. Our friend Erin Hunting, and Erin is an incredible artist based out of Australia, and she's super fun, and the work that she does, she's always drawing, like always, and she's great at posting her work while she's working on it. She does lots of like Instagram live stuff and or Instagram TV or IGTV or whatever. Yeah. She posts lots of these things, and I always love what she does because she brings such a specific style to how she does things. Well, she posted something a few weeks ago that she had drawn, and I instantly knew I wanted a print of it. And she didn't do any prints of it, but she did sell me the original. And so here it is. It came in the mail this week. Check this out. Boom.
Oh, that's perfect.
That wow. is an original Roger Rabbit by Erin Hunting. She sent me. It is so good. The
she's a machine. So she's a freaking machine. Her lines are so clean.
I don't get it. I don't know how she does it. She is so good.
And I watch her live draws. She posts a lot of live draws on Instagram.
Yeah.
And just so spot on and smooth and quick.
Yeah.
So impressive.
So just to show in contrast, right? So last week I talked about the artist Steph Liu. Right. And how yeah. she did the Jessica Rabbit. So now I've got Jessica Rabbit and Roger Rabbit.
Oh, they're so cute together.
Two very different styles, but absolutely pair well together. Because
yeah, because the colors are so vibrant. On
they're
both of them.
They're just great. And so thank you, Erin, for sending me this. I talk about her as not just because she sent this thing, but you can pick up her work. So like going to her website, you can buy all of her originals. So she, as long as they're not commissioned, she sells her originals, and they're very reasonably priced. They're not like original art is coveted, right? Because yes. we live in a world where duplication and replication, you know, you're an artist.
Mm-hmm.
It is way easier for you to sell something that you can sell in perpetuity, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
To have an unlimited supply of things, all you have to do is just click print on something and it's go. So to have an original just feels so much more personal, and the cost of those is often very comparable to that. Well, she's producing so much work, she's able to sell these at she is like a machine, because this doesn't take her a ton of time to knock these out. But
she does not sell prints normally. It's all the originals.
She does sell prints normally. Oh, okay. Yeah, but she sells her originals as well, is what I'm saying. She didn't have any prints run of this one. She just sold the original for this one. But if you go to her webpage, you can buy, there's a ton of stuff up there right now, and it's all cute. And getting it in person is so much better than, like, the colors are so vibrant.
Yeah.
Like, you just can't describe it, really, and to see it online, it just doesn't do it justice. But with the print, or with the artwork, she also sent this massive sticker of Gizmo, which is so fun. It's what she has on her profile pic right now, and then this kind of display of her a postcard with a display of all of her work, which is great. So go check out Erin Hunting on her website. It's just erinhunting.com, Erin Hunting. .com or follow her at Erin Hunting on social media. She's a great follow. She's very fun. She's a blast to talk to. We can go, maybe we'll link to the episode where we had her on if we can track that down in the archives, but she's absolutely great. So that's me. I'm going to hand it off to Lauren.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm ready to talk about The Mandalorian.
Yeah, you are.
Which Andrew just watched the second episode of on our drive in between.
Knowing
Austin
that we were
here.
Talking about it,
yeah,
I hadn't seen episode 2 yet. It just came out this morning. And so I pulled it up on Disney Plus.
Yeah. It was very nice to not have to wait a full week for episode 2 because I was dying to find out more after the first episode. And
we should say right now,
yeah,
we're not going into major depth on this because we're going to do
yes,
more.
But we are going to spoil the end of the first
there
episode, which
spoilers.
Is the big twist of.
Right.
I just say now.
I mean, now is your time to leave if you haven't seen it, or if you're wanting to see it, now's your time to pause.
there be spoilers ahead.
Yeah, so big spoiler for the end of episode one is Lil Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
He's the cutest little gumdrop in the galaxy. I can't wait to have 20 toys of that thing.
Is it, it's a Yoda. It's something of that species.
It's something of the species.
Yes. I mean, it may be Yoda. We'll find out.
I mean, it could be a clone of Yoda.
Yes.
Right?
Maybe he does a Doctor Who thing.
Maybe. I don't watch Doctor Who, so I don't know.
Well, in Doctor Who, when the Doctor can, like, regenerate, so that's why there's more than one person who is Doctor Who. So he dies, but he comes back as a new person. They have different memories,
like,
but they have the same abilities.
No, he's like a starfish.
Ah.
You just cut off one of his tentacles and it grows back.
You plant it, and then you get more
papaya. Yeah, yeah, as long as you water it.
You're going to have so many Doctor Who fans come after you now.
No starfish.
This all checks out. Yeah, you never get another starfish, but dang, those papaya are juicy. We've got the little guy.
I think it's going to be so exciting to find out more about Yoda's species or what this little guy can do, because they already showed some things in the second episode that
he's got potential,
more abilities than I imagined, and I'm so excited.
Yeah, he's got potential. He is the absolute most adorable thing I've seen in a long time.
Yeah,
like
give me an idea of someone he would beat out
on cuteness.
Yes,
I was thinking like Jojo Rabbit, the little boy who's his friend, was already competing for like cutest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And this is cuter than that.
He would, yeah. I
Let's
would
go with
that.
An easy one. Let's go
Gizmo.
With
Gizmo.
There you go.
He's cuter than Gizmo.
Let's go with like a Porg. Let's go with an easy one.
Okay. Way cuter than Porg.
Oh, he's cuter than a Porg.
A baby Groot.
Way cuter.
Oh, I wouldn't say way cuter.
No,
I
he has a giant little eye.
But baby Groot, like, I would say he is marginally cuter than a baby Groot.
What about a happy a Bumblebee from Transformers?
Oh, he's way cuter than Bumblebee.
Really? I thought Bumblebee's on
well, wait, well, an wait actual until... Bumblebee is significantly cuter than Bumblebee the Transformer.
Well, like, here's the deal. Like, you haven't seen episode 2 yet.
I know. I
episode 2 will open your heart. Your heart will just be oozing love for this character, because the second episode is all about this character.
Yeah. So watching The Mandalorian, and I saw this in our Slack, which is the reason I'm referencing it. I saw someone post in our Slack that they were surprised at how many times CG was readily apparent in the first episode. And what I would say to it is, I think the show has struck a nice balance with feeling appropriate and certainly feeling high production, and at the same time feeling comfortable and like it could fit into your normal, like almost like weekday watching. If I imagine like some of these past like sci-fi shows that you would binge, like it's almost like it doesn't try to like outdo the competition. It doesn't try to play itself like a big time, you know, it's not going to be on par with a Star Wars, the new film coming out. And I think that's good. I think it's good that it sits firmly within what it should be, which is this
TV show.
Yeah.
I feel like it's kind of like better than sci-fi, not quite as good as HBO.
Yeah. But I like that. I think it has a comfort to it.
But
that
way. And here's why I think that is the case. And we were talking about this on the way home from the gallery tonight. It feels like a return to the Star Wars that I love.
Yeah.
It feels like episode 4, 5, and 6. That's how it feels to me. And
it feels dirty and messy. Right, and there is so much practical stuff that looks so good. Like the opening where he's chasing down that blue guy.
Yeah.
And everybody in that bar is in rubber suits.
Yes.
Makes me so excited that they're just like doing it. Like the entire show is the Star Wars cantina.
It's like it's like welcome back Star Wars, right? Mm-hmm. So it's almost forgetting, and there's so many things wrong and so much conversation to be had around episodes 1, 2, and 3, and they just felt very polished. They felt very 2001, 2002 era, right? So those kinds of things.
Too glossy.
And the newer films, the newer duo, soon to be trilogy of the final saga, those have been better. They have felt more gritty and more real, but this is even more this feels like it happened right after Return of the Jedi. Like it falls into that time frame, which is exactly when it falls. And it for real Star Wars fans, when I say real Star Wars, I mean people who have been Star Wars fans for the last 30
years. You were just
years.
Trying to say not Patrick.
Not Patrick. Yeah, yeah. Everyone but Patrick.
Level 5 Star Wars
this,
fans.
Yeah. This is... that's the part you said, like, it feels at home. It feels like you're being welcomed back to a time and place that you feel comfortable.
So, yeah, like, the minute that it was over, the first episode, I was like, I felt like a kid seeing Star Wars the first time. And, like, I just fed, like, so much happiness of getting that feeling back watching the show. And, like, I don't know if the rest of it will be perfect, but I'm so excited for the show.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen episode 2. Is there a return to kind of levity in the series? Because the original Star Wars trilogy... almost to the point of being like,
it was almost like a space comedy.
It was
almost like a space comedy.
Over the time, and in fact, especially if you watch like the outtakes, they cut out some real slapstick stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So is there a bit of a return to the levity?
I think definitely. And I'm going to say a little bit more since this will air later. And we'll have more time to have seen the episode. But there's so much stuff with the Jawas that is really funny.
Yes.
Like the whole sequence with him trying to get on the sandcrawler ends so great. Like,
it does.
I laughed really hard when I was watching that. Like,
and there's callbacks to not just other Star Wars movies, but also other Lucasfilm movies.
Yeah.
I mean, you will get a...
They even mentioned Life Day. This is the first time anything canon has mentioned anything in the Star Wars holiday special ever.
It's incredible.
I was cracking up over in episode 1 because that's the only I've seen... I was cracking up over the initiating self-destruct sequence.
Oh, yes. I love IG-11.
IG-11 was fantastic.
I love that was a thermal detonator in his chest.
I know.
Like, they're so good at, like, they give you what you know, but they give a twist on it. Like, that's his self-destruct button, but it's a thing you know.
That's Taika Waititi.
Yes.
That is who is voicing that character. Oh. I did not know that.
Like, I didn't know he was doing a voice either, because I knew he was directing an episode, so I recognized his voice right away, and I'm super excited, which is why I'm not sure he'll come back or not, because since he's directing an episode, he might have just been around, and they're like, want to be a droid?
Well, yeah, we'll see. But VO work is, you can do that from your office at home, so that's fine.
Well, I know, but I just meant, like, he does have a larger role in the show anyway, so if you were counting on him coming back because of that, I don't think it's...
We'll see what ends up happening. But
other things, though.
Two components that happen in this episode, in episode 2, that bring that level of levity. One is the most adorable thing you'll ever see in the history of the world. And that brings with it so much, like, aw, and come on, you got him. Like, go get him, guy. Like those kinds of feels. But then Nick Nolte's character, which you looked
up. Oh, yeah,
he's
great, yeah.
What was his character name? Khalil?
Spelled K-U-I-I-L.
Okay. But that guy, the kind of the snout nose.
The
snout,
like, pig
nose,
looking guy.
Yeah, who just says, I have spoken. Like,
yeah, he's
him,
rad.
He brings a level of comedy to it. And it's a level of comedy too that it feels like it almost plays like a Star Wars, original Star Wars movie, but also like an Indiana Jones film, which there are also some calls to Indiana Jones in this episode as well. Like, direct calls to it, like it couldn't have been from anything else, and they're so masterfully put together in this episode. So that this is like such a surface level tease of not just the Mandalorian, because there's lots that we can explore in terms of the mythos and what we think,
so many questions,
where we think we're going, and all these things. But on top of that, this is just surface level of Disney Plus review. And we will be doing a full episode review of Disney Plus, where we'll each be kind of taking a couple of different properties and giving a full review of that here in the next couple of weeks. So look forward to that.
We just need more time to sit in the platform.
Yeah.
But yes, we're going to do a full breakdown of what there is, what the offer is, go through some of the big shows.
Like.
Yeah.
And as easily as we were able to do Apple TVs, we can't quite cover everything we need to cover in the first week.
That
and
review
a half
was
of the
easy.
Platform.
It's not as good as I wish it was.
Yeah.
Now we're gonna get serious about Disney Plus.
Yeah, Disney Plus will be. It warrants a full discussion.
I've only dipped my toes in, and I already have like a huge watch list saved down there.
Yep.
Like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let me ask this.
I have 30 seasons of Simpsons to watch.
Oh my gosh.
Going back two episodes to talking about Apple TV Plus Max Super 8, whatever.
Yeah.
I would hope that, because at the time, I'm not going to say I was overly negative, but I said that I was disappointed.
Yes.
And I felt like I got a little bit of pushback on saying I was disappointed. Does this maybe give more validity to what I was saying about Apple TV Plus?
I wasn't pushing back as much as it was only for that one. You like didn't like the morning show's premiere episode. That was the only pushback you got from me. I think everything else you said was dead on in terms of the value. Now, value versus investment. We didn't invest anything into that. So from that standpoint, the ROI is very high. But if you look at our time investment, then you start having to evaluate based on that. I think just at a first glance, without giving any more information, within 10 minutes of owning Disney Plus, I felt like I got my entire money's worth, like within the first 10 minutes.
Right. You didn't, but you felt that way.
But I did feel that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I saw the potential. I saw what I had left in store. So, but all of that to be said, you're in for The Mandalorian. Yeah.
Yeah. So in
big time.
Yeah. I'm not going to say it's like jumped over Watchmen 100% for like my favorite show right now, but it's like competing. It needs to like, it's so close. It's like,
how'd you feel about
episode, I go back and forth.
How'd you feel about episode 2 being only 32 minutes?
It didn't bother me. Like, I did feel like it was shorter than the other one. Like I noticed that, but I'm okay with them being different episode lengths.
Yeah.
Especially if it goes like Game of Thrones, like I'm sure something will be longer eventually. I think it's cool to like watch streaming platforms like embrace that they don't have to stick to a certain time period and they can serve the story however is best.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I don't know if you guys watch the OA, but they really experimented with that.
You mean the OC?
The OA. It was on like a Netflix show, but they really went wild with like their episode lengths. And it was like the first show that I remember doing something like really different with that, but it worked for that show.
Like
and
variable it episode lengths.
Yeah. Some are like an hour and some are like 20 minutes. I mean like big differences, but it worked so well in that show and it wouldn't have worked otherwise.
Yeah.
So I think this might be the same thing.
Yeah.
I feel like they had a lot happen in the second episode. It didn't feel like, enough happened in 30 minutes.
Yeah. They completed the story arc that they needed to do within that time frame, and they didn't belabor it and I didn't feel shortchanged.
It
definitely felt like a full deal.
The only thing that the second episode made me a little nervous about is like, I hope it's not too much like story of the week adventures and it's more of an overarching story that connects throughout, because it definitely was like a adventure of the week this time, which I'm okay with happening some of the time.
It still did progress the story enough that it revealed about characters. So we'll see kind of how that is.
I just think it's going to be an interesting balance to strike, because you want him to have cool adventures and see all the new space things and creatures and people and places. But I don't want it to be like, and this week the Mandalorian fights this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't want it to feel like an old cartoon from the 80s where nothing is connected to anything else. Mm-hmm. We will continue the conversation online. There is a thread in Slack, the Mandalorian thread that's already in Slack. So just go to that channel and continue the conversation there. And then look forward in a couple of weeks to our full Disney Plus review. Yes. Patrick, I think it's just you, buddy.
All right. So this week, and by this week, I mean last night, I saw a late showing of Ford v. Ferrari. This is the new film by James Mangold. So to give you an idea of who the director is, some of the notable films you've probably seen that he directed, Walk the Line, 310 to Yuma, Logan, most recently.
Never heard of it.
So he has what I feel like these films have in common is that they play in a way that they have mass appeal, but they're slightly maybe grittier than the average mass appeal film, and also with just enough of a twist to feel more interesting than the average mass appeal film.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to you breaking that down.
Well, so for instance, Logan still managed to play very well, but it did not feel like every other...
It feels very different than other
superhero
movies. Comic book
hero film that we had seen to that point. Like there was,
I think especially X-Men movies.
Oh, uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And then again, a bit, it felt a bit more real. So when I said gritty, I didn't mean gritty. What I meant is it felt a bit more true to life, even though the human emotions felt more true to life, even though we're dealing with these like comic book superheroes. And I feel a similar thing about 3:10 to Yuma, that still a very mass appeal film, but somehow felt a little bit more genuine than going in and watching like Hateful Eight. So anyway, so that's James Mangold. So he directed Ford v. Ferrari. So this is the film with Christian Bale and Matt Damon, and it's about...
based on a real life, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's the story of Ford wanting to win Le Mans, and so them actually putting a car up. So Ferrari had dominated the series, just every year winning the 24 hours at Le Mans. And Ford decided that they wanted to demonstrate their authority in American muscle and what they could accomplish. And so they decided to put up a team. And it goes on to show that kind of unfolding, you know, this kind of brutalist American company. It's not necessarily, you know, it's not meant to be the finest. It's not finesse. It's not the quality. It's really this mass-produced brutalist car, showing that they could go up against this handmade pinnacle of perfection.
Yeah.
And again, with Christian Bale and Matt Damon at the helm. So Christian Bale plays Ken Miles, who's
at the wheel.
At the wheel. I guess that makes more sense.
We're not in Star Wars anymore.
Ken Miles, who's Christian Bale plays Ken Miles, who's a very respected racer. Matt Damon plays Carroll Shelby, which Shelby should be a very familiar name. Shelby Motors, which still to this day has partnerships with Ford and is known. I mean, everybody knows what a Shelby Cobra is. Everybody's seen the car and that type of thing. Another standout performance would be John Bernthal, who plays Lee Iacocca, who would be the marketing director for Ford at the time. John Bernthal, you'll know from Punisher, and then also from Walking Dead. And
Shane.
And then also Josh Lucas, who plays Leo Beebe. So that's who we spend most of the time with. Watching the preview for the film, every year I feel like we get one or two of these films that feel like they feel like they'll ultimately be mainstays, but they feel like maybe on the edge of being overly polished. So it kind of falls in line with I'm trying to think of other films that I would say have a similar level of production. But thinking of a film like Hidden Figures, or thinking of what's the Tom Hanks press where like they run the newspaper?
I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks.
Yes, someone can look it. It's fine.
Looking it up.
But the point is thinking along that terms of movie, like it's almost a movie like
Post.
The Post. It's like almost a movie like you feel like can't fail. Like you look at the cast, you look at the story they pick, you see the polish of the trailer, and you expect it to be good. You also expect it to be safe.
Yeah. Like it's a bit washed, clean.
Yeah. But that's fine. We have one or two of those films every year, and I still love those films. I enjoy them. They tend to be pretty well paced. Normally they'll get a little slow at a point, but still very, very competent films. And so that's what I was expecting. And watching the trailer, the trailer felt a bit clean. The trailer felt like it fell into some of these, you know, kind of stereotypical comedic beats. But at the same time, when you look at the cast and you know the story, it's a very compelling material, very compelling people, very competent people. You expect it will be a good film.
Well, it's presented like an underdog story.
Sure. Mm-hmm. But I did not expect it to be a great film. I was very ready for it to be good. I was excited to watch it, but this film exceeded my expectations. I was about to say I want to be careful not to oversell it, but I don't think I can oversell it. It's a film you should go see. So it has a decently long runtime. It's 167 minutes. I mean, almost 2 hours and 50 minutes. It's a very, very long film. It feels like an hour and a half long movie. I mean, the pacing is incredible. It was much funnier than I anticipated, but it also got very serious at parts. The themes they touch on, you know, there's a part of me that thought that this was going to be just Ford propaganda for the entire film.
Yeah.
And that's actually not the case. They touched on some very complex themes. The characters themselves, they did a really good job at showing all these varied personalities. You know, it was interesting. Watching the Imagineering documentary, I talked to you about the idea, and they talk in the documentary, and we had a conversation this week about the idea of personalities making up an orchestra. Like, you need people that are wholly different from each other, because that will give you the richest sound. If you try to have everybody sound the same, it'll ultimately
was a bassoonist, you wouldn't have any other beats.
Yeah, I mean, it would ultimately be very thin.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I think that this movie did a good job at showing all of these different personalities and not really demonizing any of them. Ultimately, they were able to fit into the arc. So I just walked away very impressed. The last thing I was going to say, I made the comment that in the trailer, there were several times that they kind of showed the stereotypical beat that's the easy laugh.
Yeah.
Inside the context of the film, it was absolutely... the trailer was intentionally misleading. Inside the context of the film, completely different meaning, completely different outcome. And actually, one of the most touching moments in the film for me is played off like a joke in the trailer.
Interesting.
Very impressive. So anyway, that's all I'll say about that.
I got two questions for
you. Yeah, go ahead.
Did you know this story more before you went to see the movie? Because, like, I'm not very much of a car person, so, like, I don't really know much about this story.
Okay, so...
I'm just curious what your interest level is in that stuff.
So, anyway. Actually, I think it was the Grand Tour, not Top Gear. It's the same people. I think the Grand Tour actually released a short documentary a few years ago going into the Ford Ferrari story and talking about Ken Miles, Lee Iacocca, Carol Shelby. I had seen that. So
this isn't your introduction to that
story.
You
knew kind of the basics.
Yeah, so I've heard the names before. I know the players. I knew...
You knew that they
were
going to win or whatever.
I remembered bits of the outcome. I did not remember it in full. And so I still found myself surprised at places. This is a great movie to go in not knowing. I would say that...
Yeah.
That if you know the story, I think it's still fun. And if you don't know the story, I think it's
enhanced fun.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is don't feel like you need to know it. And I wouldn't feel like, oh, it's all car stuff. I don't know cars. You know, don't feel that either. I think most anyone can enjoy this film. The other thing I would say,
except people with weak bladders.
Right. Right. Because it's bring a cup. I don't know. The other thing that I would recommend seeing it in theaters. So I told you is a lot like almost like Dunkirk. If you've seen the movie Dunkirk, the sound is very visceral. I mean, you hear sheet metal rattling. You hear like screws rattling. And it's almost everything
that's a big part of being in a race, too.
Well, and yeah. Everything is very violent sounding. You know, that's easy to say, but even just the act of accelerating just sounds brutal and violent. And the sound design in this film is so good that I really would say you need to see it in theaters to just hear how visceral the audio is. So I think you had one more question.
Yep, I do. Do you think this will be a Best Picture movie?
No. I mean,
like in the category, not like that might win. Just curious if you think it'll get
there. Okay, there will be nominations. So either for sure, I mean,
sound engineering,
sound engineering, of course.
Probably like Christian Bale and Matt Damon.
At least Christian Bale. I mean, don't get me wrong, I like them both, but Ken Miles. Maybe it's because of the type of people I grew up around, but he played that character just absolutely to a T, just incredibly well. So.
He almost always just crushes.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Christian Bale gets a Best Actor nod. There will for sure be a sound design nod. If this ended up in a category of Best Film, Best Picture, I wouldn't be surprised. Now, I don't think it will win, and there's some other films that that I'm already looking forward to that I think will are more likely. But I wouldn't be surprised if it got a nod for it. But Christian Bale will absolutely get a best actor nod for this film.
Just curious if you thought it would cross the threshold.
I am excited to see it. I've wanted to see it, but it's not been like an overwhelming kind of thing where it's like the Joker was for me. We're like, I have to see this the second it comes out. It's not been exciting. After hearing you talk about it, I'm more excited to see it. So
I would leave right now and go watch it again. That's how strongly, like genuinely.
Even knowing we're getting on a plane in 6 hours.
It would be irresponsible of me. But no, I mean, genuinely, just a very, very good film. So I really liked it. And I think most people will. Like I would be surprised, frankly, for someone not to like it.
Interesting.
So, really good film.
Bold statement. So you would give it a what number?
Oh, I mean, I would at least give it a 9 out of 10. It's tough to ultimately award 10s. And the film, you know, it's amazing even for that runtime. There are a couple of things they touched on that I don't think they spent enough time with. And so then it begs the question, well, maybe that should have just been left out of the film. So sure, there are,
if you couldn't dive in.
So there are some pieces like that that are maybe extraneous, so that maybe the cut could have been a bit tighter.
Yeah.
Which also might sound pretty obvious when you have a runtime that's that long.
Yeah.
Which is maybe that keeps me from maybe giving it a 10, but it's a 9 for me for sure.
Okay.
And so far,
for sure.
So far, critics' reviews would say the same thing. So had a good weekend, it has a $96 million budget, and it brought in, I think, 28 or 30 million over the weekend. So good start. It should do really, really well. And we're going to get a sequel, but it should do really well.
And by over the weekend, you mean the first night, because we're.
Well, so between what it already brought in and between what pre-sale tickets are and stuff, it should cross about $28 million this weekend. Okay. So, yeah.
All right. Well, I think that covers all the things we wanted to and needed to cover. Like I just said, Patrick and I are hopping on a plane here in the next couple of hours. This is happening retroactively. By the time you're hearing this, we will have already done our trip. And hey, our meetup was great. Thanks for coming to it.
Yeah.
And we'll have so much more to talk about next week about our California trip. But until that point, go to mofone.network to find show notes and links to all the stuff we just talked about. Go buy some things from some of the people that we talked about. Go see these movies. Go watch TV. There's a ton of stuff out there. We're not lacking for content. So if you're bored, that's on you. There's a ton of stuff out there to do and see and purchase. So go do that stuff because you're just more enriched.
We're so spoiled for choice right now with all the great like TV and movies that are out right now. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. So go do all that stuff. And then while you're at it, go subscribe and leave a rating and a comment and a review. That's what it is, a review.
We need comments specifically.
Yeah, reviews.
Reviews.
Yeah. Review the
written
show.
Written reviews.
Written reviews on iTunes or iTunes. Or you can you do reviews on Spotify?
I don't know, but that's just my cocaine. So I need I also do cocaine.
Yeah. Hard cocaine.
But
that's why you don't need to sleep before your trip.
Yes. I need reviews.
Yeah, so bring those reviews and we will read them
We have egos.
Yeah. Yeah.
And mine is saying, feed me, Seymour.
Yeah. That's a reference to a great film. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Surprisingly funny.
It's surprising that you've seen that movie.
It's not
animated, so. Little Shop.
When are they going to do
a remake of that?
That's in production.
Imminent.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, I was joking.
Who's doing it?
I don't know, but.
That's for another episode.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Hopefully Rick Moranis.
Hopefully Rick Moranis comes back for that. Yeah, everyone's favorite comedian. Not comedian. Canadian. Well, comedian too, I guess.
Sort of.
For this episode, we're going to hop out of here. I'm Andrew.
I'm Lauren.
I'm Patrick.
Peace out.
Adios.
Bye.